Sorry, honourable members, what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to straighten up the importance of, by the end of the day, all of us who must be having a full process of the bill. That is what is happening, what date and so on. When are we considering it? What is going to happen when? So that even the department is on course in getting ready for call back and so on. Do we have any other item that we're supposed to consider today other than this one? My proposal is that we stick by this one unless something out of this place needs to be considered. I'm told we've got apologies.
The apologies are from Honorable Landers, Professor Ndavandava, Honorable Ramahlodi, Honorable Stolle, Honorable Smart, Honorable Adams, and Honorable Itapan. I think Honorable Swartla will be joining us anytime soon. That's all the apologies that I have.
I table the apologies. At least it's a key endorsement to the presentation. Can we hand over to the department?
Thank you, Chairperson. We have prepared a presentation for you, which we made available to the members. Mr. Cyril Robertson from the department will do the presentation. And then, as you know, the bill is based on a report received from the South African Law Reform Commission, and Ms. Deline Clark, who was the researcher responsible for the report, is also here today to deal with questions that you might have. Thank you, sir.
Okay, all members, I'll proceed with the briefing on the bill. The Protection from Harassment Bill, introduced as Bill 1 of 2010, emanated from an investigation by the South African Law Reform Commission into stalking behavior. The Commission's report on the matter contains legislative proposals. It was contained or named Project 130. According to the Commission, the existing civil law framework, namely an interdict, and the criminal law framework, namely the punishment of stalking conduct as a crime, or the prohibition thereof by means of a binding over of a person to keep the peace, in terms of Section 384 of the Criminal Procedure Act of 1955, did not provide adequate recourse to a victim of stalking who are not in a domestic relationship. The Commission therefore proposed that legislation should be enacted specifically to cater for a civil remedy against stalking. The bill proposed by the Commission aims primarily to address this type of behavior by means of an order of court called the Protection Order, in terms of which the harasser is prohibited from continuing with the harassing conduct. If the perpetrator contravenes such a protection order, he or she is then guilty of an offense. The content of the bill will now be discussed. Mainly, clause 1 of the bill contains various definitions and to spell out the application of the bill in relation to the Domestic Violence Act. The following definitions is of particular importance. Firstly, a complainant, which is defined as a person who alleges that he or she is being subject to harassment or stalking. A respondent is defined as any person against whom proceedings are instituted in terms of the bill. Harassment as such is broadly defined, namely, a person who directly or indirectly engages in conduct that causes harm or inspires the reasonable belief that harm may be caused to the complainant or related person can be brought before court. The conduct complained of must be unreasonable in the circumstances. Unreasonableness features strongly in the definition and caters for the following scenarios. Firstly, If the perpetrator unreasonably follow, watches, pursues or accosts the complainant or related person, or loiters outside of or near the building or place where the complainant or related person resides, works, carries on business, studies or happen to be. Secondly, if the perpetrator unreasonably engage in verbal, electronic or any other communications aimed at a complainant or related person by any means, whether conversation ensues or not. Thirdly, if the perpetrator unreasonably sends, delivers or causes the delivery of letters, telegrams, packages, facsimiles, electronic mail, or other objects to the complainant or related person, or leaves them where they will be found by, given to, or brought to the attention of the complainant or a related person. The concept of harm is also widely defined and means any mental, psychological, physical, or economic harm. Another important definition is related person. It is defined as a member of the family or household of the complainant or any other person in a close relationship with the complainant. It is wide enough to cater for a myriad of different circumstances one will come across in our society. Also in the definition is a clause that spells out the concurrent application of the bill vis-a-vis the Domestic Violence Act, by providing that a bill does not prevent a person who may apply for relief against harassment or stalking in terms of the Domestic Violence Act from applying for relief in terms of the bill. During the course of its investigation, the Commission considered whether the Domestic Violence Act should not merely be amended to also make provision for stalking and harassment in situations where the perpetrator and victim are not in a domestic relationship, as is set out in the Domestic Violence Act. The Commission, however, came to the conclusion that such an amendment to the Domestic Violence Act may cause confusion due to the specificity of the Domestic Violence Act. And furthermore, personal protection orders do not fit generally into the ambit of the Domestic Violence Act, which inter alia involves issues of financial dependence, physical and emotional power and control, and shared emotional history, which set it apart from non-domestic abuse. The solution proposed by the Commission was that specific legislation should be enacted to cater for a civil remedy against stalking, cum harassment, in situations where there is no domestic relationship between the perpetrator and the victim. Clause 2 of the bill set out how to go about applying for a protection order. It provides who may apply for such an order and the circumstances in which an application may be brought. The procedures put in place are intended to be straightforward and inexpensive. Legal representation is not necessary. This clause provides for different scenarios. The complainant can apply to court for a protection order against harassment. It will later be referred to as a protection order. A person other than a complainant who has a material interest in the well-being of the complainant or related person may also bring an application for a protection order on behalf of the complainant and with the written consent of the complainant. A child or person person on behalf of a child may apply to the court for a protection order without the assistance of a parent, guardian or any other person. A child is defined as a person under the age of 18 years. An application for a protection order must be brought in a prescribed manner to a magistrate's court by lodging the application and supporting affidavits with the clerk of the court. An important aspect is that a clerk of the court is required to assist the complainant who is not legally represented with his or her application. The clerk is also required to inform the complainant, where applicable, of his or her right to lodge a criminal complaint against the respondent. Because the conduct under discussion so often occurs outside usual working hours during the dark hours, provision has been made for an application for a protection order to be brought outside ordinary court hours. The court must, however, be satisfied that a complainant may suffer harm if the matter is not dealt with immediately. Clause 3 deals with the consideration of the application by the court and the issuing of an interim protection order. A magistrate's court must consider the application for a protection order and must issue an interim protection order against the respondent, notwithstanding the fact that the respondent has not been given notice of the proceedings. The court can, however, only do so if it is satisfied that there is prima facie evidence that, firstly, the respondent is engaging in or has engaged in harassment, secondly, harm is or may be suffered by the complainant as a result of such conduct if a protection order is not issued immediately, and thirdly, the protection order to be accorded by the interim order is not likely to be achieved if prior notice of the application is given to the respondent. It is during this stage that a court will consider the crucial aspect of reasonableness of the respondent's conduct, to which I have already referred to. The court will obviously have to strike a balance between reasonable and unreasonable conduct. The interim protection order, if granted, together with the record of evidence, must be served on the respondent and must call on the respondent to show cause on the return date why a final protection order should not be issued against him or her. An interim protection order takes effect the moment it is served on the respondent, and a clerk of the court must ensure that a certified copy of the interim protection order and the original warrant of arrest is served on the complainant. If the court decides not to issue an interim protection order, the clerk of the court must cause certified copies of the application and supporting affidavits to be served on the respondent, together with a notice calling on the respondent to show cause on the return date specified in the notice why a protection order should not be issued. Clause 4 of the bill creates a mechanism in terms of which witnesses can be subpoenaed or warned to attend court proceedings. Failure to comply could result in criminal sanctions. Similar provisions are being inserted in the Domestic Violence Act to enhance its application. These amendments are contained in the schedule to the bill and will be discussed later. The court may, in terms of clause 5 of the bill, of its own accord or at the request of a complainant, order that proceedings be held behind closed doors and may also exclude persons from attending proceedings where the witness is a child. Clause 6 of the bill provides for the issuing of a final protection order. If the respondent does not appear on a return date and there is prima facie evidence that the respondent has harassed the complainant, the court must issue a final protection order. If the respondent appears on a return date in order to oppose the issuing of a final protection order, the court must hear the matter and issue a final protection order if it finds on the balance of probabilities that the respondent has engaged in or is engaging in harassment. If a court issues a final protection order, the clerk of the court, sheriff or peace officer identified by the court must cause the original of such an order to be served on a respondent and a certified copy of such order and the original warrant of arrest must be served on the complainant. Moreover, once a court has issued a protection order, the clerk of the court must forward a copy of the order as well as a warrant of arrest, which is issued at the same time and which is suspended until it is required, to the police station of the complainant's choice. I shall revert to the warrant of arrest when I deal with clause 8. In order to limit the complainant's exposure to any further trauma as far as possible, clause 6 also gives the court the discretion on its own accord or at the request of the complainant to order that during the examination of any witness, the respondent, if he or she does not have a lawyer, must direct questions for the witness to the court and not directly to the witness. The court will then redirect the question to the witness. Clause 7 of the bill sets out the court's powers in respect of a protection order. A protection order by a court must prohibit the respondent from engaging or attempting to engage in harassment of the complainant or related person, or prohibit the respondent from enlisting the assistance of another person to harass. The court may also impose additional conditions necessary to provide for the safety and well-being of the complainant or related person. Among others, the court may order that a firearm or a dangerous weapon in possession of or under control of the respondent be seized, or that a complainant be accompanied by a peace order officer to collect personal property, or even that the harassment be investigated by the South African Police Service with the view to a possible institution of a criminal prosecution. A further protection measure is built into this clause where provision is made for the physical home and work address of the complainant to be omitted from the protection order in instances where it is necessary to ensure that a perpetrator is not able to make any form of contact with the complainant or related person. A court may not turn an application away purely on the grounds that other legal remedies are available for the applicant to use or explore. I now return to the issue of the warrant of arrest, which is issued when a protection order is issued. In terms of Clause 8, when an interim or final protection order is granted, a warrant of arrest will automatically be issued for the respondent. The execution thereof will be suspended pending any non-compliance with the condition of the protection order. If a condition of the protection order is thereafter contravened, the complainant may then simply hand a warrant of arrest together with an affidavit in which the contravention is set out to a member of the South African Police. The warrant must then be executed by the police official. The police official must arrest the harasser if imminent harm to the complainant may result from a breach of a condition of a protection order. A warrant may also in certain instances be executed not by arresting the person, but by handing over a written notice to the harasser to appear in court on a date and at a time mentioned in the written notice. This method of securing the attendance of the person in court will be used if the police official is of the view that there are insufficient grounds of arresting the person. Criteria are spelled out in this clause to guide a police official on what is meant by imminent harm. For instance, the risk to the safety or well-being of the complainant or related person, the seriousness of the conduct in question, the length of the time since the conduct complaint about took place, and the nature and extent of the harm previously suffered by the complainant or related person. When a complainant approaches a police official for the execution of a warrant, the police official is obliged to inform the complainant of his or her right to also lay a criminal charge against the respondent on how to go about doing it. Further guidance to the police official will be given when policy directives in Section Clause 17 of the bill are prepared and issued. This will also be discussed later. Clause 9 of the bill is important in the sense that it makes provision for the court to order a member of the South African Police to seize any arm or dangerous weapon in the possession or under control of the respondent, and that a copy of the evidence so recorded be submitted to the National Commissioner of the South African Police Services for consideration in terms of the Firearms Control Act. A dangerous weapon is defined as an object other than a firearm which is likely to cause serious bodily injury if it were used to commit an assault. Protection orders can be varied and set aside. This is regulated by Clause 10. However, in order to ensure that a complainant do not withdraw their applications under duress, which so often happens in matters of this nature, the court must be satisfied that the application to withdraw is done freely and voluntarily by the complainant. Question may well be asked, to which magistrate's court would a person go if he or she wishes to bring an application for a protection order? Clause 11 of the bill is relevant in this regard generally. It would be the magistrate's court where either the complainant or the respondent lives, carries on a business or is employed, or where the incident or incidents took place. A protection order is enforceable throughout the country, no matter from which court it was issued. A crucial aspect for the success of this proposed legislation relates to the service of court process. If documents have not been served properly, applications for protection orders will in most cases flounder and the objects of the bill will be frustrated. Therein lies the importance of Clause 12. It provides that service of documents take place in a manner prescribed by regulation by a clerk of court, a sheriff or a peace officer, or in a manner as the court may direct. It is important that there are a number of different options which can be used depending on the circumstances. The question may arise, what is a peace officer? Clause 1 states that a peace officer is a peace officer as defined in the Criminal Procedure Act. The Criminal Procedure Act in turn defines a peace officer as a magistrate, a justice of the peace, a police office, official, a correctional official, and a person who is a peace officer by virtue of Section 334 of the Criminal Procedure Act. Another important provision is Clause 13. While it is necessary to put a mechanism in place as proposed in the bill, it is equally important to ensure that a mechanism is not abused, especially by complainants who want to punish a person by making frivolous, vexatious or unreasonable applications for protection orders. Persons who abuse the process and waste the court's time are liable to have cost orders made against them. Proceedings contemplated in the proposed bill are subject to appeal and review. This is regulated by Clause 14. The penalties contained in Clause 15 give an indication of the seriousness of the issue being addressed and the need to protect the rights of persons, with particular reference to the right to dignity and the right to freedom and security of person. The bill criminalizes the following conduct. Firstly, a contravention of any condition of a protection order for which a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years may be imposed. Secondly, the making of a false statement in respect of a contravention of a protection order for which a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years may be imposed. And thirdly, the revealing of information of the complainant in contravention of a direction of court for which a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 2 years may be imposed. Once the bill is enacted, regulations will obviously need to be made. This is regulated by Clause 16 of the bill. The successful implementation of many statutes is dependent on how they are applied by different functionaries in government. Clause 17, like many other bills passed recently by Parliament, requires heads of departments to expand on the legislative provisions by issuing directives to ensure that statutory provisions are given effect to meaningfully as intended by the legislation. The National Director of Public Prosecutions must therefore issue directives regarding the institution of prosecutions in respect of any offence arising out of this legislation. In similar vein, the National Commissioner of the South African Police Services must issue national instructions to regulate the conduct of police officials in terms of the proposed legislation. And the Director General of Justice must issue directives to regulate the conduct of clerks of court in terms of the proposed legislation. As in the past, the directives and instructions must provide for disciplinary steps to be taken against prosecutors, police officers or clerks of the court if they do not comply with the directives or instructions. Besides the Domestic Violence Act, to which I have already referred to and which is being amended in order to secure the attendance of witnesses at court. There are also other statutes which are being amended by the bill. These amendments are set out in the schedule to the bill. While some are being amended consequently, others are being amended to enhance their effectiveness. One of those being amended to enhance its effectiveness is Section 384 of the Criminal Procedure Act. The provisions of the 1955 Criminal Procedure Act, which has been kept alive because of its usefulness, deals with binding over of persons to keep the peace. While it is still applied, there are aspects which, if amended slightly, could enhance its efficiency. At present, this section gives a magistrate the discretion to hold an inquiry if a complainant is, if a complaint is made against the person who conducts him or herself in a violent or threatening manner. The provision is being amended so that where such a complaint is made under oath, an inquiry must be held. At the moment, the magistrate has a discretion, after the holding of an inquiry, to order that respondent give reconnaissance with or without sureties an amount not exceeding 2,000 rand to keep peace. It is proposed that the provision be amended by removing the discretion in requiring that the magistrate must make an order if he or she finds, on the balance of probabilities, that a conduct in question did in fact take place. A mechanism to secure the attendance of witnesses is also proposed, something which is lacking in the provisions as it stands. I believe Parliament is currently busy with certain legislation that might impact on the freedom of press, and I believe the question might be asked what the effect of this bill might be on the day-to-day working of journalists. Well, because journalists often in the course of their investigation for purpose of getting information might be accused of harassing a person due to the fact that they constantly contact them, they have raised a concern that a bill might impact negatively on the media, particularly investigative journalism. This aspect was considered during the drafting of the bill. As in other legal systems throughout the world, a legal system has to balance conflicting interests. This is especially true with regard to the phenomenon of harassment, as is addressed in the bill. Harassment may consist of various acts, which, when considered on their own, cannot be regarded as an offence or a delict, but a sum total of which may amount to a serious infringement of the right of a person. This is also the reason why harassment per se was not made an offence and criminalised. The process envisaged in the bill is that the court of law must decide, weighing up all relevant factors, whether certain conduct which falls within the definition amounts to harassment. To strike such a balance, a court must, among others, take into account the competing constitutional rights of different parties, as well as other established legal principles, which may either justify or not justify the so-called harassing behavior. The whole issue of reasonableness, as already indicated, will come into play. Although the bill provides that the court may, without hearing, grant an interim protection order against the respondent, if it is satisfied that there is prima facie evidence the respondent is engaging in or has engaged in harassment, an opportunity is provided for a hearing on the return date to show cause why a protection order should not be issued. Thank you.
That is it. Application of protection order in the civil milieu. Honourable Zach.
Chair, thank you. And
Honourable Jaja.
Firstly, my apologies for being late. The aim of the bill is to prevent stalking, which is obviously very commendable, and I'm sure we all support that. The issue which you ended off with, investigative journalism, is obviously an issue that I wanted to raise with you and just ask your comments. You seem to have tried to strike that balance, but is the framing not too wide when one looks at what harm is to be caused to the complainant, even inspiring a reasonable belief of mental harm, surely that would cover all forms of investigative journalism, and it will be very difficult for investigative journalists to do their jobs, because immediately any person that has been investigated will get an order to stop them doing their immediate work. And sure, there might be a return day in a month or two's time, but won't that harm them, first of all? Secondly, if one takes trade union activities, for example, would that not also fall foul of this, where you have a trade union that is watching or outside a building or whatever, following and causes or even inspires the reasonable belief of economic harm to an individual, or would that not also fall foul? I'm just testing it, because clearly you've done a lot of consideration. This is the first time we're looking. And then an issue, for example, a person demonstrating outside an abortion clinic, standing praying outside an abortion clinic, objecting, could a harassment order be obtained in that example as well, where there is the reasonable belief that he might, that clinic or individual practitioner suffers economic harm? Just on the broadness of the scope of this bill, because clearly one wants to target what you intended, and that is stalking, and that is the key aspect that we need to get to. Thank you, Chair.
I wonder if harassment is a broad definition. Stalking is a broad definition of harassment, or harassment includes stalking. That's also a very important thing to clarify, because I'm worried about you saying the main aim is stalking. I think it needs to be cleared. JJ?
Don't notice any definition of stalking specifically. But anyway, look, my questions are really this. This has been the result of a Law Commission, Law Reform Commission report investigation. I don't remember having received that report. We need it. If we haven't received it, can we get it? But two, I think it would be useful, I don't know if it's prepared now, to get an input on the Law Commission process. How long has it taken? You know, particularly the times, who was interested, what were the issues that came up, all those kinds of questions. But we've been given a bill with an acknowledgement that there was a Law Commission process without any input as to what that was. Maybe it was assumed we'd read the report, I don't know, but then it could have been assumed that we'd read the memorandum associated with the bill. Secondly, it would be useful to know what is happening in other countries, what the international precedents are, because this is obviously not something unique to South Africa, in fact probably more prevalent elsewhere. Maybe that's covered in the Law Commission report, but that would be useful. Then I similarly have concerns. I mean, you know, the issue of investigative journalism, which is more laudable, is raised. But I mean, what about the paparazzi? You know, which is a legitimate interest. Unfortunately, I don't think we can purport to ban the paparazzi stalking. Nobody would want to stalk me. Stalking high-profile people, movie stars, whatever, and that's just not covered at all. And I'm similarly worried about the definition of harassment. I also don't know, one, that it's too wide. Secondly, that it's not wide enough. I mean, with electronic communication. Have you considered, for example, if somebody writes stuff on their Facebook page or on somebody else's Facebook page on a perpetual basis, is that covered? It doesn't seem to be, because is a Facebook page a communication? Is that covered by following, watching, pursuing, accosting? No, that's physically. Is it covered by engaging in verbal, electronic, or other communication? Maybe it is, I don't know, but maybe you should look at that. I mean, we are finding, I think, perpetually in Parliament that the speed of the developments of modern communication often leave us behind, and we need to ensure that it is covered, and definitely writing on Facebook pages, either your own or somebody else's, should be really covered. Then the costs issue. I mean, look, you say on the memorandum that financial implications, number 7, page 32, funds will be required for the training of clerks of the court and police officers, and will be covered by your existing budgetary frameworks. But hey, what about magistrates? You need to train them. I mean, you can't implement this bill without that. So have you actually really looked at the cost issue? You're asking clerks of the courts to do this. Are they the best people? Would it not be maybe your maintenance officers? You know, those kinds of people. But please, can you give us more input on who is going to administer this? Maybe we need to get input from the police from their side, because it seems to be basically justice officials, police, and magistrates that are going to enforce it. So yeah, I think those are the concerns that I've got. I think that you know, process-wise, it would be useful to put it out. I'd like to get responses, not necessarily now on those questions, particularly the Law Commission process, a document just summarising what the Law Commission, how the Law Commission process worked, and a document on the international precedents. The individual concerns, I mean, can be aired probably during the public hearing, so I think we should be going for public hearings, and we can then see how complicated or otherwise it is, and how quick we can process this bill.
I referred to the stalking issue. That was the nub of the SA Law Commission's investigation. It was into, and that according to the memorandum on paragraph 2, the bill emanates from an investigation of the Law Commission into stalking. So that is, obviously we need to debate. It's obviously gone a lot wider now. Thank you, Chair.
Differences between this bill and the Law Commission bill. I mean, that the minister felt needed to be made. But it's also interesting, if it started as stalking, I can't find any reference to stalking in the definitions. It's not under harassment. So why is that? Unless I've missed it. Maybe I've missed it.
I'm sure you will agree with me. Sometimes you may inquire into something and discover something else and make recommendations of what you have discovered, which becomes equally important. Honorable Ingosh.
Thank you, Chairperson. I see in the memorandum at the back you were advised that it's not necessary to consult the National House of Traditional Leaders, because this has no impact on customs of traditional communities. Now, I wonder then if you've applied your mind to the manner in which a young man will pursue young ladies with a view to having relations with them, that you sometimes make constant attempts to get the attention of the lady, and sometimes you will waylay on the way to the shops or the rivers where they fetch water, and try to persuade her to see the matter in the way that the young man sees the matter. I don't know if you have applied your mind to that. I know it has to do, is the kind of harassment or stalking, I imagine, that is likely to cause harm, as I understand. But obviously, this kind of pursuit is not about to cause harm. It's about to cause the opposite, actually, of harm. Now, I wonder if you've, in your looking into this matter, you have considered that kind of activity.
You remember the next traditional something, Chair?
The issue of the intention of the harassor doesn't seem to feature. Would that not be quite an important factor? I mean, you basically, a complainant may apply for a protection order against harassment. And harassment is conduct that causes harm or inspires the reasonable belief that harm may be caused to the complainant. The intention of the alleged harassor just doesn't feature. Did you look at, or you presumably must have looked at that aspect?
I guess maybe the mine is poor, it could be technical, whatever, I don't know. In clause 9 you speak of the provision for a seizure of dangerous weapons. But I would want to be clarified on the phrasing other than a firearm. What does that seek to explain? Because at face value, I consider firearm a dangerous weapon. So when you say other than firearm, how does it help you to carry that, to implement that provision? Generally, on other issues especially, could be my instinct that most of the issues raised seem to border on the challenges of the courts in balancing interests. I guess the biggest answer would lie in that there might be no legislation that is going to be very specific in dealing with, I think, the challenges in the balancing interest. But I think a very important question that is raised by Honorable Swartz and Honorable JJ is that is there no way in which you could prevent certain administrative costs? Because I think they accept the commitment of the bill to balance interest, but is there no way you would actually take the journalists out of the matter, out of the way? Probably that's where the question is. But I want to argue that maybe the issue lies in the balancing of interests of all these of these parties involved. But what other issue I'm curious about is what the chief has raised, is what informed you? I'm not going to respond to you, JJ. What informed this view that this thing doesn't apply to traditional leaders? And it looks like a very, very general statement, too sweeping. And what thought was applied before such an assumption was made? I think the inquiry himself has articulated some very important day-to-day life activities. The question is, do our lawyers understand our society when some of these laws are made? Honorable Smith?
Thanks, Chair. Also, just a question. What kind of sort of assessment of sort of general bullying that happens at schools and as well as universities and technicons has been taken into account? Because I was recently reading an article about a child, and it ties in with what JJ was saying about Facebook and Twitter and these sort of Mixit and all these social networking sites, where a child actually landed up committing suicide after having a group of school children write all over Facebook and Mixit and Twitter and you name it. I know that there are sort of general rules in place for school bullying kind of things, but this kind of harassment extends to outside the actual school parameter as well as outside the university parameter. And I believe that this concept of bullying is becoming an increasingly large problem on university campuses and in similar such areas.
One issue I almost forgot. It seems as if this conduct cannot be a conduct of 20 or 50 years ago. How were we intervening to resolve it in the past? I find it very interesting that this law seeks to remedy, based on the background that there was no remedy before. We've been living in the same way we are living, and some of these harassments, I think they are as old as human beings. I'm just curious, how will we intervene? Thanks.
Sorry, let's start with the last question and work back. I think in the past, most of the kind of conduct that we try to bring under the general term of harassment was inter alia punished as, in some instance, like crime injuria, and maybe in some instance, some instances, an interdict was obtained to prohibit that kind of conduct. But, you know, as was said, times change, society becomes more complex, and we have to try to cater for that needs. So the answer regarding that is, in the past, it were addressed under the existing law. Criminal law, some of the conduct might have amounted to crime. In some instances, delictual remedies were probably available, and then obviously the interdict procedure. Thank you.
May I just add that a number of people were left without a remedy, and that is part of the reason why the Law Reform Commission started looking at this aspect of the law. So although some people were able to make use of civil law remedies and some were able to make use of crimes, others fell through the cracks. And that's been a big concern.
The next question that was asked relates to bullying. I believe that was thoroughly considered when we, the South African Law Reform Commission, considered this aspect. Also when the bill was to extend considered by the department. I think the definition is wide enough to cater for aspects of bullying. I know cell phone bullying is prominent, Facebook, emails even, and I think the definition is wide enough to include all that kind of conduct which can be addressed through this remedy.
Approach is that let's allow them to respond, pick those points where you want to make a follow-up at the end, then you can make that follow-up.
You understand what I'm saying, but that's the full response.
Gaps there.
Chairperson, if I may respond with regard to the traditional leaders. In our workshops, the same issue was brought to our attention with regards to courting procedures that do take place. But in that, and in speaking with traditional leaders during our workshops, we had to balance the rights of culture and customary law and equality. And when we looked at the issues of gender discrimination, and specifically when one's looking at harassment and stalking, or harassment covering stalking as such, one is dealing with gender discrimination on quite a high level where women are mostly the victims of harassment. We were told that there was, I'll just read out of the report if you don't mind, that in arguing that the preservation of a culture and customary law appear to be of a lesser order in relation to the right of equality, Madam Justice O'Regan in Brink versus Kitsoff states that gender discrimination in our society has resulted in deep patterns of disadvantage, which are particularly acute in the case of black women, as race and gender discrimination overlap. And she added that it was a key message of the Constitution that all such discrimination needs to be eradicated from our society. Traditional leaders have also taken the stance that they will not deal with issues concerning violence against women. They justify their stance by citing the irreconcilable link between the constitutionally guaranteed right to participate in one's culture and the guarantee of gender equality. Justification for pursuing a legal remedy for victims of stalking lies in the fact that the right to assert certain constitutional rights includes the right to resist the imposition of the same rights, for example, cultural practices that violate the principles of equality and non-discrimination. So the Commission is of the opinion that it is imperative to provide effective legal recourse against stalking inter alia to women who wish to enforce the right not to embrace cultural practices which amount to stalking.
Okay, the next question relating to the seizure of arms and dangerous weapons, if it was asked by the chairperson. The bill makes provision for both the seizure of arms as well as dangerous weapons. In the Act, arms is defined as inter alia firearms, and dangerous weapons is defined as something else than a firearm, which can an implement that can cause serious harm to a person. So we did cater for both of these kinds of weapons. The next question relates to the intention of the harasser. Harassment is a very complex kind of conduct. On the one hand, you can actually say that harassment can take place with a certain intention. But I think what we tried to do in this instance was more or less to evaluate it from the position of the person being harassed. In some instances, let's take as an example, a person that's certifiable in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. We cannot form an intention to do certain acts. If such a person on a frequent basis harass a complainant, if you look at the intention of the harasser, you can probably not interdict a person in that instance. That is why we try to, with the definition, to go as wide as possible, and that is why the intention aspect was probably left out of the definition.
I could perhaps just give a brief overview as to the process followed in terms of the investigation. The investigation started in January 2003. We issued an issue paper for comment in 2003, end of 2003 for comment, and then the final issue paper was in 2004, it was an issue paper in 2003 and a discussion paper in 2004, and we submitted the report on stalking in 2006. The Minister of Justice, and it was signed by the Minister on the 27th of October 2008. That's just in terms of that process.
Regarding the cost issue, it's correct. Magistrates probably need some training in the application of this bill, but you must also take into this act, or the bill that is proposed, is similar to the Domestic Violence Act. It has got more or less a similar procedure that is proposed in the harassment bill. So one must take into account that the procedures, how to deal with court proceedings, is mostly similar to what has already been done by courts as from 1993, the old Domestic Violence Act, which was repealed by the current Domestic Violence Act. It is correct that certain legal aspects may need to be considered afresh by magistrates, inter alia the harassment definition and what conduct amounts to harassment. But essentially, procedurally wise, it is the same as the Domestic Violence Act, so I don't foresee that magistrates, as well as clerks of the courts and even police officers, will need substantial additional training. And I believe With regard to the Domestic Violence Act, most of these training are actually covered by the current budgets of the departments, in the idea the Department of Justice as well as the South African Police Services.
But in terms of using the word stalking and harassment, stalking was identified in the investigation on domestic violence a number of years ago at the Law Reform Commission, also identified as an issue of concern in the sexual offences investigation. Flowing from this, the stalking investigation was put on the program of the Law Reform Commission. And as it developed, we realized that although the definition of stalking is the stealthy pursuit of someone or an animal, it has actually developed internationally to evolve into the harassment of a person, and it is much wider than just pursuing a person within the dictionary definition. And that is why when the report was finalized, the bill that was attached to the report was named the Protection of Harassment Bill and not the Stalking Bill. And together with that, internationally, if one looks at precedents overseas, very few, if any, of the international laws use the word stalking. The UK example is, for example, the Harassment Act. We look at the Canadian Criminal Code, which includes stalking provisions, but it doesn't talk about stalking. It describes the actual actions. Perhaps at this stage I can also just say that internationally, all of the Australian jurisdictions have anti-stalking legislation, some civil procedures and some civil and criminal procedures. 49 states in the United States of America, including the District of Columbia, have legislation in place, as does Canada and the United Kingdom.
Okay, regarding investigative journalism, I believe this aspect was fully considered, firstly by the South African Law Reform Commission, and then also when we actually published the bill for comment, we did receive various representations into area from the South African National Editors Forum regarding this matter. The problem with stalking as such is that it's very complex. Even everyday so-called legitimate actions can amount to stalking. And that is firstly why we did not criminalize it, due to the fact that it will be very hard to actually get a definition that will cover everything. And further, but the main thing why we actually decided to stick with the definition, irrespective of what the journalist actually said in the comment to us, was more or less to the effect that, and I already said that in my presentation, is that everything is put before a court, more or less to look at the reasonableness of certain conduct. In your initial application in front of the court, I believe you will make an application. In your affidavit, you will set out what the conduct is against which you try to obtain an interdict. And it's in the discretion of the court to consider that conduct of the journalist in granting the initial interdict, whether it is reasonable or not. If it's unreasonable, be sure journalists can stalk somebody quite badly. On the other hand, it might be in a legitimate public interest that he does that, but it will be in the discretion of the court to decide whether and when it amounts to stalking. Regarding trade unions, I believe that is also similar to that. Again, we put it in the hands of the court to decide whether certain conduct is reasonable or not. They're the same.
I think really essentially what one's trying to prevent is unreasonable, non-physical, low-key intrusion. So you're trying to stop physical harm from occurring. So it really all turns on the unreasonableness of the actions.
Can I just say that the report was sent through to Parliament yesterday, so the Secretary will ensure that you do get copies of the report of the Commission.
Honourable JJ, Honourable Swart.
Why, you know, it's a bit of a problem that we only get the Law Commission report, well, we don't get the Law Commission report, that it gets sent to the Committee Secretary the day before this briefing, and he hasn't sent it out.
Sorry, he did.
When? Well, I haven't got it. How many people have got it, apart from Nkosi? Okay, nobody else seems to have got it. I don't know, there seems to be preference then given to traditional leaders, maybe. Okay, but anyway, that sort of... Yeah, okay.
I only distributed the electronic, I'm in the process of printing the hard copies. It's a very thick document, so you'll be getting it today or tomorrow.
The point I'm not going for you, the point I'm more raising is to the department. You table the bill in at the beginning of the year, January or February, but you don't bother to give us the report then. I would like we've got the report, okay, we're getting the report. The international precedent issue, I don't know if it's contained in the report, but it would be useful. Then I think the difficulty I've got is that, you know, this bill is going to be administered by magistrates. And you are then basically sure there needs to be flexibility. But things like bullying at school, Facebook pages, etc., you're not touching. You need to give guidance to them. Okay, so I think there needs to be greater detail. I mean, it's something that I think can be canvassed in the hearings. But this is just my own feeling at the moment is that the actual definition of harassment requires a lot more work. And then if you take Mr. Swart, we're not saying this must be the stalking bill. I think nobody has a problem with it being the harassment bill. It's just bizarre that people understand a concept of stalking, and that doesn't find itself mentioned in the bill. That's all. You mentioned everybody else is going to harassment. Harassment is broader. That seems to be the way to go. But you did mention that other jurisdictions do include stalking in their harassment bill. And then I think the issue of the journalism, nobody touched on, nobody responded to my questions around paparazzi, because, I mean, the problem there is with investigative journalists, there's a greater public interest. I know in one hears occasionally internationally that some other celebrity has got a order against I don't know what an individual paparazzi is, paparazzo, okay, the Italian, an individual, a paparazzo, to stop them harassing. What did they use? That would be international. I don't think it's ever been done in this country. But I just think there's a whole lot more that needs to be done. But I don't know how much further one can take it now. We need to have the hearings, and we can respond. But definitely from my side, I think, can we get that international comparison, particularly with the more recent law, because it is developing. Two, I do think there's general concern with these other aspects of bullying, of campaigning, protesting, things that might have come up more recently, and then the electronic communication forms that particularly what's happening in other countries, who's looking at that. And then the costs issue. I mean, look, you know, with respect, I raise the issue of magistrates. Maybe training can be covered, but you do specify clerks, but you don't specify magistrates. I'm just saying we really would have thought that should have been done, but you can't amend the memorandum now. But I think the implementation of the bill, it would be useful as well for the department to start looking at a plan, because you're expecting people who do not have legal representation to be assisted by the clerks of the court. Are they the best people? Who's doing domestic violence? Maybe it's just the clerks of the courts as well, but can we look at that implementation aspect? Because yeah.
I think we also obviously need to go and look into the whole issue of how this act lies with the Domestic Violence Act. Clearly this is much broader, I would presume, because I notice under your definitions, paragraph 2, where you say this act does not prevent a person who may apply for relief against harassment or stalking. So they're both covered under domestic violence, harassment and stalking. but much narrower, I would presume, from applying for this act. Then secondly, I also noticed that a child can approach the court, understandably, but to what degree is it desirable without the assistance of a parent, guardian, or any other person? We can understand the intention clearly there if the parent is abusing a child or something. But I'm just to comment on that, you can have a young child that might think, find out and fabricate something and runs the risk of a criminal sanction because that child can go to court without the assistance of any person. Is that, I can't remember any other act that allows a child to go to court without the assistance of any person. But I can understand the intention, but surely there would be someone like a teacher or a caregiver that could assist a child or another. Just your comments on that briefly. It just struck me that I don't know whether there's any other statute that allows that. Thank you.
I just want to find out when you were talking about the comparative studies that were made. I heard you mentioning Western countries. Are there any examples of African studies in this field?
Chairperson, it seems as if to me, from the response I got to my question, that indeed this bill has an impact on culture and custom. The very fact that a view was made to the fact that in balancing the interests of custom and culture with those of non-discrimination and equality, it was decided that, well, if there are customary practices that seem to discriminate against women, then that has to be struck down. I think that is the very reason there's a need for the House of Traditional Leaders to be engaged.
My question around the changes between the Law Commission, Law Reform Commission bill and the introduced bill, you didn't cover that aspect, but somebody do that. And then just on Nkosi Holomisa's point of traditional leaders, I mean, it's a statutory requirement as to what needs to go to the National House and what doesn't. And it either meets that or it doesn't. I can understand the feeling that this wouldn't have met that. But I don't think it's a bad thing, Chair, because the bill is now with Parliament for in the adverts for the public hearings for Parliament to request the National House to, of its own volition, make input.
And our response.
Perhaps just one or two points, Chair. That is correct, as Honourable Jeffrey has indicated. That is what we're indicating in the memo, that it doesn't affect traditional law as such. But I understand the arguments, and obviously the committee can then consider to consult with the House of Traditional Leaders. As far as changes to the bill is concerned, from the bill that was submitted by the Law Reform Commission to the bill that has been introduced, I think it really related to that to the provisions relating to the directives. Those were, amongst others, included, but Sarah can just indicate further. And that was included after discussions at the Cabinet Committee. There were suggestions as far as that is concerned. Yes, and we will also, those questions that we have not responded to properly, we will provide you with input on those, as well as, of course, the comparative study, and we'll also look at African countries. We will also give you that information. And then, as I indicated, the report, and that for that I must apologize, it was an oversight from our side, that we did not provide it earlier.
Further amendments that was made to the Act. I believe the definition of harassment was amended to extend inter alia to include economical harm. A procedure was suggested by the South African Law Reform Commission whereby the court will be or will have the authority to inter alia during its hearing of a matter refer a so-called harasser to a psychological institution or send him to a place where he can get treatment. That was taken out. The reason therefore was mostly the cost, that it will the cost aspect. We thought that government couldn't afford the process that was recommended by the South African Law Reform Commission. Furthermore, indication regarding a breach or where a protection order is breached, the powers of the police, we included in the bill certain circumstances under which a police officer must arrest a person. We prescribe imminent harm.
I think what we'll do, Chair, is we'll give you a report on exactly what it is that we changed with the reasons for that for the next meeting. A report on what we changed as far as the bill from the Law Reform Commission is concerned vis-a-vis our bill, and then also the reasons for the changes that we made.
That point.
It seems as if the purpose of the Honorable Ambrosini, you were not here when he introduced this. You don't know the rules you have agreed to engage on. Can I exclude you? Honorable Sergeant, Honorable Ambrosini.
Yes. With regards to your child, a comparative... Sorry, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Apologies for the late arrival. I was engaged in another committee, but I have, long time ago, diligently read this bill, and I hope that my reading, my supplement, with the department had to say that. You remember when we were scheduling, I was referring to this as the sexual harassment bill, because I made a note to myself that this bill is everything but dealing with sexual harassment. And the question is whether the department would allow this bill to be hijacked to include the notion of sexual harassment, defined as unwelcome sexual advances, unwelcome sexual proposals. I have seen a similar process in the general category of harassment taking place in the United States when the first legislation on harassment came through, and nothing changed perceptions. Nothing advanced, in my humble opinion, the cause of women emancipation and security of women in the workplace and the entire mindset of society than the introduction of strong legislation on sexual harassment. The department might be of the view that that might be something for a separate piece of legislation, but the framework of protective orders enforcement is exactly the same. And the specific reference to unwelcome sexual remarks, unwelcome sexual offers, and the responsibility of management, especially in the workplace, to ensure compliance with sexual harassment laws are two important elements which I personally would like to have added to this bill.
May I first respond to Mr. Swart? In terms of its of the interaction of this bill with the Domestic Violence Act, it essentially mirrors the same provisions. But what we'll find is, when if one goes back historically, the SA Law Reform Commission recommended a definition of harassment to be included in the Domestic Violence Bill, as it was. The committee then expanded it and changed it to two definitions of stalking and harassment. And essentially, if one looks at what international jurisprudence shows us, the harassment was actually captured under the stalking definition, and stalking was captured under the harassment definition. So what the harassment bill now aims to do is to have one definition of harassment, which incorporates both activities, if one could put it that way, that are captured in the Domestic Violence Act under one umbrella. So that is why one refers to the definitions of stalking and harassment in the Domestic Violence Act, because that's how it's captured there, although the actions and behaviors are captured under the one definition in the harassment bill. With regards to a child, a child can approach a court also in terms of the Domestic Violence Act, and it really goes about standing. Very rarely, or forever, a minor child would approach the court, would always need someone to accompany him or her, but there would always be an issue of standing of that person, and this basically takes that argument away. So the child will not be approaching the court on his or her own, but a teacher would be able to assist the child, an elder aunt or whomever it might be.
It relates also to the questions that were asked by other members, whether we should be more specific in the bill. For example, bullying in schools, specifically mentioning it, Facebook, campaigning, protesting, and then also sexual behavior. The idea with the bill is to not go into the specific detail, but to get a broad definition that will include all those issues. And we should also just bear in mind what was said. The whole concept, as was indicated, of unreasonableness comes into play. So it will depend on the facts of each particular case, whether a certain action would amount to stalking or harassment, for that matter, or not. So yeah, the idea was to be more general and not to try to go into specific behaviors, because one can sit and think of so many things that a person can do which will amount to harassment. And if we start to try in the bill to define everything, it just becomes impossible.
Before you come, Honourable Abusin, you may not, unless you're not happy with the application of the principle of reasonableness, with the broad definition and the articulation of balance of interest in the provision, those elements seek to do as many as possible. Like he has just said, there are many ways of harassing people. They are countless. You will never finish counting them. Like what you were just doing now, looking at him as you were speaking. Honorable Abusin.
Mr. Chairman, and I'm very familiar with the argument. I read the definition, I studied. But if you look comparatively, when it comes to sexual harassment, there is a special definition and special legislation for a very simple thing. That special harassment can be brought about by means of flattery, by means of what is ordinary but out of place. My colleague comes in, especially in the workplace, and they say, hey, what a great pair of legs. No, and I know that I shouldn't say or remark on other anatomy things, or says, what are you doing? Who are you seeing? Who are you sleeping with? Now, there is it's part of this course which in itself is not harmful, or is not, but it's out of place, especially in the workplace. So harassment in the workplace is one category, sexual harassment in the workplace, which needs to be protected more stringently. And then there is sexual harassment in the rest of society. And internationally, that has been specified differently, because it doesn't fall within this definition. And it's necessary to change attitudes within society, because it's something that has always been done, has never been considered wrong, it goes with the flow, and unless it is specifically specified in legislation will be read against the social mores which presently condone it.
Do you suggest that psychological and physical excludes the things you say?
Concept, but I just not in the point. I don't want to engage in a debate. I bring examples, but it is the action of harming rather than the effect that by itself may not be considered such. And the defense is, hey, I'm paying a compliment. Most of the sexual harassment is by means of compliments, which should not find place in the workplace. And when the actor, the person who acts, has reason to believe that that is unwelcome. So the criteria is being unwelcome. And effectively, it's almost an expansion of the right of privacy, which we are dealing with in the other bill. Don't tell me things that I know, which are personal, that you know that I don't want to hear from you.
We need to accept that if the discussion takes that approach, we might have to discuss it even amongst ourselves. It might not only be answered by the department. Let me explain why I'm saying this. A lot of these issues can only assist the court depending on the response by the complainant. Because what really is harassment? There is a language that might be a harassment to you, which might not be what you call a harassment to somebody else. And the point I'm trying to make is that some of these things find clarification when somebody says, I don't like what you're doing. And then how do you insist doing it becomes harassment. It depends on the nature in which they come across. That's why it's difficult, as far as I'm concerned, in a provision, in a bill like this, to think that you can include everything. But however, if you want to make a response to that.
Chairperson, thank you. I think what we looked at specifically was our existing labour legislation as well, which deals with our basic employment and looking at policies that are in place in terms of the workplace dealing with sexual harassment too. We also looked at cyberbullying and cyberstalking and realised that which happens in cyberspace very much mimics what happens in reality, in the real world too. So by defining it the way that we have, we felt that we were able to encapsulate what happens in cyberspace as well as what happens in the real world, so to speak. In terms of the verbal harassment, one will also see if one talks about intent, where a person says something to you and says, but I was only joking. That's why one doesn't look at the intent of the person, but at what the effect is on the person receiving the information and the unwelcomeness thereof.
That articulation of the intention of the harasser. So we cannot agree that we engage on those issues on an ongoing basis. Thank you very much. I think the process has begun, and then different stages will be embarked upon until we consider and pass the bill.
When are the hearings? Have dates been set?
The dates are not really, but they will be in this term. Because if you look at this term, we have the... We'll be having public hearings on the trafficking. We also have workshop and... let me just say that in terms of the problem that we have, I don't think we'll have space for public hearings on this one. We'll only have public hearings on the trafficking bill.
Maybe what we need to do, because I'm worried about this uncertainty, probably what the coordinator should accept is that next week on Tuesday or Wednesday, a clear process on all these bills must be in place. Let's say we anticipate harassment, there was a submission today. Hearings within the context of the human trafficking. Actually, the dates, it should be possible to say on particular dates we anticipate hearing, on particular dates we anticipate consideration and so on and so on. And my proposal is that why don't we allow them to actually table that process next week? Yes.
Whether there's been an advert to invite public submissions on this bill yet? Thank you.
You mean on the harassment? No, the advert is not yet out on this one.
At that point? Thanks for that help. Indeed it is. Diligent.